In a land ravaged by injustice and poverty, torn by the pain of its people, an oasis of peace provides serenity and strength to those who inhabit it, and hope to those who come by. The nation is Zimbabwe, and the oasis I am speaking of is the Benedictine Monastery of Christ the Word. It's in a town called Macheke. I looked it up on the internet and discovered it's in the province of Mashonaland East, some 100 kilometres southeast of the capital Harare. It's a farming area where tobacco and other crops once flourished. Yes, there is a reason I have chosen to focus on such a remote place today, and the reason is that one of the Benedictine monks who lives there, Father Richard Field, was passing through Rome and agreed to come and tell me about his life and his work at the Macheke Monastery of Christ the Word.
The Zimbabwean bishops invited Ampleforth to make a foundation in Zimbabwe.
Yes, Father Richard himself is originally from Ampleforth Abbey in York, England.
And it arose because in 1992 there was a conference of Southern African Benedictines, Bokoza, in Zimbabwe at Chishuasha, the diocesan seminary. And I think that was because at that time various people objected to meeting in various countries and Zimbabwe was seen as neutral ground. And during the conference, somebody said, it's very curious having a Benedictine conference in Zimbabwe when there aren't any Benedictines in Zimbabwe. So they said, well, perhaps we'd better invite some. And one of our monks, Father Mark Butlin, who does a lot on international monasticism, helping monasteries set up in developing countries, he was there at this conference. And I think it was partly through him that the bishops wrote to Ampleforth and said, would you be interested in making a foundation in Zimbabwe?
The monks, Father Richard explained, then took 4 years to research the project.
The bishops had said, we do not want you to run schools. We do not want you to run parishes. We want you to be a centre of spirituality. Now, at that conference, the Precious Blood Sisters had been invited as observers, because although they're not Benedictine, they were founded by Abbot Fanner, a German Cistercian who had also founded the Marin Hill Missionaries. Cistercians, you may know, are the very strict Benedictines. So they were there, and they said, well, if they do come, we can offer them a building and a site to start with, which was a two-storey building which, despite being built by the Jesuits, was actually known to them, called the monastery. And the idea was that we should go there. But during the 4 years that we were researching the project, the sister's farm manager came to them and said, could he use another building and convert it to a house for his family and himself? Because before the war, which in Zimbabwe means before the independence struggle in the late 70s, the sisters had run not just a girls' school, which is still there now, but a boys' boarding school and a hospital and so forth. And then they'd all been evacuated during the war. And when they came back, just opened the girls' school. So this boys' dormitory was redundant. While he was doing this rebuilding, the sisters had their annual financial audit. And their accountants came to them and said, we have discovered that your farm manager has been embezzling money and livestock. So the sister said, oh, yes, and did nothing until he'd finished. And then Lay Simon him and said, our accountants tell us that you've been embezzling money and livestock. Oh, the police are coming tomorrow. Oh. So overnight he and his family disappeared, and 2 months later we arrived, and they said, here's a nice new building.
Thus, 4 months from Ampleforth, journeyed out to Zimbabwe. And since then, Father Richard told me, they have built a church, a guest house, and a couple of other small buildings close to the original one.
I remember in chapter when we were discussing the project, and one of the Ampleforth monks said, well, if they aren't going to run schools and run parishes, what are they going to do? And the abbot at the time said, well, they might do some desktop publishing. they'll probably keep chickens and so forth. To which this monk said, but Amberforth monks don't keep chickens. To which the abbot was able to reply, well, Father Barnabas does. To which another monk replied, sotto voce, but everybody could hear him, he doesn't keep them very long, twisting an imaginary neck in his hands as he said this. So four monks came out in 1996, and there have been one or two changes in personnel since, but Father Robert, who is now the prior and was the prior, the founding prior, Father Robert Igo, and Father Barnabas Pham, who keeps chickens, and as well as a lot of goats and geese and rabbits and ducks, so that we're self-sufficient in meat, more or less, and fruit and vegetables. And then I came out in 2003, and I then went and did the religious formation ministry course in Dublin. And now the oldest of the community, Father Alban Crossley, he went back to England, so now we're three monks.
Three of the original monks, he pointed out, because in the past year or so, the small Benedictine family has grown to include Father Joseph Denala, the very first Zimbabwean to make his Benedictine vows in Zimbabwe, Brother Placid Mavuru, and Boniface Mutumufu, who was recently clothed as novice.
There's a four-year programme before that happens. 1 year as a candidate, 1 year as a postulant, 2 years as a novice, then simple vows for at least 3 years, after which he can make perpetual vows, solemn
vows. Where
would
these men make their formations?
With us.
With you.
And later on, after solemn vows, they would probably do some other courses elsewhere.
Father Richard observed the monastery is slowly but steadily growing, its roots reaching down into a new land.
Have you stayed true to your original aim, which was one of being a centre of spirituality?
I think so. A lot of people come to make retreats with us, lay people, religious sisters, priests, diocesan priests, often for a week, and they would normally come to our liturgy, and one of us would probably spend an hour or so each day with them while they're with us. And partly because there are so few of us, we try to be very faithful to the office. The day starts at 5 o'clock with matins or the office of readings. Vigils, which goes on for about 35 minutes, some psalms and then a couple of readings. And then we go and make a do-it-yourself breakfast. And then at 7:22, we have Lords, which we sing for about 20 minutes. Again, four psalms and short reading, prayers, followed by Mass. And then at 8 o'clock, we have half an hour's lectio, which we do ourselves in our rooms. And then from 8:30 till 10 o'clock is manual labour time. So people might be working in the garden. At the moment, Boniface, our postulant, and myself have been making some shelving for a new storeroom. We've also sometimes spent quite some time on improving our water supply. And then 10:15, we have terse, which lasts for about 8 minutes, and then people might have tea or coffee. And then do some study in rooms or some teaching. There are courses going on in scripture, in church history, in monastic history, in the rules of Benedict for candidates and the catechism of the church. So different ones of us will take in liturgy. We'll take different responsibilities for that. And then 12:45, we have sext, which is the sixth hour of the day. Again, about 8 minutes, followed by a sort of soup and salad lunch, very light lunch, which is a talking meal. And then people can have a siesta if they want until 2:30, when we have noon, the ninth hour of the day. And then manual labour in the afternoon again. Cup of tea at 4, and then Vespers at 5:30. Lasts about 25 minutes, again sung. And then supper at 6:45. And then compline at 8:00, unless it's a big feast the next day, in which case we have vigils and have a long sleep until 6:30 next morning.
Is the monastery set in a community? Are there Zimbabweans living around you, and do you interact with them in any way?
It's on this mission site owned by the Precious Blood Sisters, who have this boarding school for 500 girls. And we're between them and the teachers' houses. Apart from them, there aren't very many people in the immediate locality. We celebrate a mass every other Sunday up in the mission church for the girls, if they're there, and for the teachers and what local people come. Otherwise, we have all our liturgy in our own monastery church. And as we get bigger, we've identified a site still on the same mission site, which very happily is called Monte Cassino, reflecting its own Cistercian antecedents. And we have identified a site about 1.5 kilometres further in, so it's a bit more separate from the school. And we're about 1.5 hours' drive from Harare, which means that we're not immediately surrounded by heaps and heaps of people. And in fact, a lot of the people who come to us to make retreats are working very, 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 very hard in schools, in hospitals, in missions, in parishes. And I think probably 80% of them remark on the peace and the quiet and the silence. And Abbot Timothy coined the phrase, supporting the front line. And as a centre of spirituality, to answer your question, I think that's what we're trying to do.
Are you happy in Zimbabwe?
People quite often ask me that, and I say I'm not sure that happy is the right word, but I am very content to be there and count myself very fortunate to have the opportunity of a completely new way of life at my age.
Zimbabwe is one of the countries we think of because a lot of the people in Zimbabwe are very poor. They don't have basic necessities. They're people with no food, with no water. The education system has broken down. Does the suffering of the people of Zimbabwe enter your monastery in any way? Is there an exchange?
It's interesting. The three categories you mention actually cover three areas where we try to help. Father Robert, who is the prior, used to be a nurse, had trained as a nurse. And he looks after people who come to the door with all sorts of medical problems.
They know they can come to him.
Yes, they do. And he's just been trying to get grants because two grants have dried up, for supplying some of them with ARVs or with supplying some of them with money for bus fares to go to two local hospitals where they can get the ARVs. With money to get some decent food, because as you may know, antiretrovirals are no good if they aren't supported by a decent diet. So that's one area. People also come to us once a week for food, and we liaised with the local parish and have a committee of four ladies. Women are usually much more dependable on knowing what's what,
right,
in this area.
Is it a kind of a soup kitchen?
No, we just supply the basics, not a meal. But we give them a series of chits, which they can give to people who can then come every week just for a small amount of mealy meal, sometimes some cooking oil or some sugar or some salt or some soap or some matches. And it's not so much for each person that it makes it worth their while to walk 7 kilometres from Macheke, unless they really need it. And there are a lot of people who do. Notably, a lot of grandmothers who are bringing up children whose parents have died of AIDS. And the third area where we try to help is, which you mentioned, is education. And that's due to people overseas sending us money. And what we have been able to support up until now, about 60 children at the primary school, where the fee per term is now $15, and a similar number at the high school in Mincheke, where the fee every term is $25. And over the years, some of these have gone on to tertiary education, and until now, we've been able to support some of them, about 10 or so. But actually, just before I came out, our funds ran out.
What about the environment? It's a very beautiful country. I did an interview with someone who said that the wildlife is also a victim of the situation of the poverty. Wild animals are being eaten. There's deforestation. The biodiversity is suffering. Do you have that feeling at all?
Not at first hand, but when people can't buy paraffin, either because it's not available or because they haven't got the dollars to buy it, the only thing they can do is cut down wood. And there are certainly some woodlands that have been stripped. And similarly, they will sometimes kill wildlife which they wouldn't have needed to otherwise.
When I spoke to Father Richard, he was awaiting the renewal of his residency permit. I just had to ask him if he hopes to stay.
Yes, I do. I think I'll probably stay either until we're no longer welcome, or if I become so old and infirm that it's a burden on the community to look after me. I mean, I think if Alpaforth had been invited to make a foundation now, we would probably have said, well, it's not a very prudent thing to do. But I think having gone there when we did, we're now very determined to stay.